For decades, conversations about poverty have focused on jobs, public assistance, parenting, and mass incarceration. After years of intense fieldwork and study, Harvard sociologist and 2015 MacArthur Genius Grant winner Matthew Desmond has come to believe that something fundamental is missing from that picture: how deeply housing is implicated in the creation of poverty. Desmond says not everyone living in a distressed neighborhood is associated with gang members, parole officers, employers, social workers, or pastors, but nearly all, he says, have a landlord. The result is his new book, Evicted: Poverty and Profit in the American City. It is published by Crown, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Matthew Desmond to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
What brought you to this particular subject and wanting to look at it in such depth?
We have a lot of poverty in this country. We are the world's leader among rich democracies for the depth and expanse of our poverty. And that's troubled me and disturbed me and confused me. And I wanted to understand that a bit more. And specifically, I wanted to know what role housing plays in driving poverty in our cities.
When you think about this aspect of poverty and how it has to do with housing, how are they linked, and have they always been linked as closely as they are now?
They have always been intricately linked, poverty and housing, but it's different today. It's different. You know, the good news is we've made a lot of progress over the years of abolishing slums in our cities, making sure low-income families live with heat and running water. Just a few generations ago, those things were not taken for granted. We took on a battle with the slum, and we won. And I'll be the first to recognize that we still have a long way to go. When I lived in a trailer, in a trailer park for this book, most of the time I didn't have hot water, even though I told the landlord, look, I'm a writer, and I'm going to write a book about you and your trailer park. And so imagine what my neighbors had to go through. But there's no arguing that that we haven't made massive steps in the right direction in terms of improving housing quality. But now we're facing another problem, this massive problem of unaffordability, the fact that most low-income families that are renters in this country are spending over half of their income on housing, and one in four are spending at least 70% on rent and utilities. So under those conditions, which are new, which is a new thing, evictions have become, frankly, commonplace in poor communities.
You say that you came to recognize that eviction is a cause, not just a condition of poverty in America. How so?
Yeah, that's right. So when I started this book, I thought, well, you know, if I look at eviction, it'll allow me kind of a different frame or a certain window into poverty. But I finished this book just convinced that eviction is making things worse. It's casting people on different paths, much more harder paths. So when you're evicted, often you don't just lose your home, you lose your possessions, which are either, you know, put on the curb or taken to a storage unit by the moving company that accompanies the sheriffs. And you have to keep up payments, and a lot of families that are now homeless just can't. Now, the biggest moving company in Milwaukee told me that 70% of their eviction and foreclosure moves they do just get hauled to the dump. You lose your community and your relationships there. Children lose their school. Eviction comes with a court record if it goes to the court, and just like a criminal record can really affect, you know, your job prospects or the degree to which you can qualify for certain aid, an eviction record can have big consequences too. So a lot of landlords turn away families with a recent eviction. A lot of public housing authorities say, we're not going to take you, and we're not going to extend aid to people that have a recent eviction record. So that's why we know that families that get evicted move into worse neighborhoods afterwards. They move into worse housing. Workers who get evicted often lose their jobs, and anyone out there that's been evicted knows why. It's just a consuming, stressful event that can cause you to make mistakes at work and eventually lose your footing in the labor market. And then there's the effect eviction has on your spirit and your mental health. And we know that moms that were evicted, you know, experience higher rates of depression 2 years later. We know that suicides attributed to evictions and foreclosures doubled between 2005 and 2010. So you take all that up, right? You add all that up and all these ramifications. And I think we have to conclude that eviction is a cause, not just a condition of poverty.
You write in the book a lot about Arlene, who you met in Milwaukee. She was living in a small apartment. Tell me about her story and ultimately the questions that her situation raised.
You know, the big question, I think, for me that her situation raised was like, how do you do this? You know, how do you survive under these conditions? So when I met Arlene, she was a single mom. She was trying to raise two boys in a very poor neighborhood, living in a shoddy two-bedroom apartment. And that apartment took 88% of her income. She was spending 88% of her income every month just on rent. And so she was confronted with just terrible choices. You know, should I feed my kids or pay the rent? You know, should I pitch in for a funeral or pay the rent? And what Arlene really taught me is just how much the high cost of housing is crushing families, and how eviction isn't the result of irresponsibility in cases like Arlene's. It's more an inevitability. You know, the grasp that she had on housing was so tenuous that the smallest thing, and you see this over and over in my book, the smallest thing could lead a family to be evicted. So she taught me quite a bit. Yeah.
Matt Desmond is the author of the new book, Evicted: Poverty and Profit in the American City. There's one thing in the book, well, several, but there's just one thing that really struck me, and that is the fact that you were looking for some basic numbers on pretty simple things, like how prominent is eviction and who gets evicted, and looking for studies. And what you found is there really isn't much, if anything, on that subject. That is really surprising.
It surprised me, too. I didn't think I'd have to do that work. You know, I just wanted to spend all my time with landlords and tenants, you know, on the ground. But we were missing really basic information, like how often does eviction happen, who gets evicted, what are the long-term consequences of it. So I gathered a lot of that data myself. You know, I ended up analyzing hundreds of thousands of eviction records. We surveyed over 1,000 renters in the city of Milwaukee. We interviewed over 200 renters in eviction court, analyzed millions of 911 records. You know, when we put all those methods and all that data in conversation with one another, and the things that I was seeing on the ground, you know, spending time with these families and these landlords, were really informing and informed by those larger pursuits too. And I think, you know, I think that that conversation between the methods was really fruitful to me, and each kept the other honest. But it also begs the question, like, what happened? Like, how did we overlook this massive problem? And one answer to that is we've been focused a lot on public housing. You know, we have a lot of books on public housing. And right. I think that most Americans that don't live in trailer parks or in the inner city still do think that the typical low-income family benefits in some way from government assistance or public housing. But the opposite is true. Only about 1 in 4 families that qualify for that aid receive it. So situations like Arlene's, where, you know, moms are spending most of what they have and getting no help from the government, Arlene's the typical case in America. And that's where our focus should be if we really want to understand the role that housing is playing in inequality.
One of the questions that I should have asked at the beginning, but why Milwaukee? What was interesting to you about Milwaukee?
Yeah. I just love Milwaukee. I love the Rust Belt, and I love cities like Buffalo and Milwaukee and Cleveland. And so there's some sort of visceral or emotional connection I have to those cities. But there's intellectual reasons, too. And, you know, the story of the American city is often written on the margins, you know, with our greatest successes like New York or San Francisco, or cities that some people consider our greatest failures, or cities that are having the toughest time, you know, like Detroit, Camden. But I wanted to write a story that gave us a shot at representing a lot of people's experiences, you know, people in St. Louis and Cleveland and Kansas City. And Milwaukee gives us a shot at that. So, you know, this book is set in Milwaukee, but it tells an American story.
I spent some time in my work and in working with homeless shelters in the region. And one of the things that came out that surprised me was that the number of homeless actually spikes more in the summer than it does in the winter, because that is when more people are evicted. Did you find that to be true as well?
I found exactly that to be true. And so, you know, when I say Arlene's paying 88% of her income on housing, I mean rent. That's a rent. And there was no way she could pay that much on rent and keep current in for her utilities. So what do you do? So what you do if you're someone like Arlene is you keep current with your landlord in the winter because there's a moratorium on gas shutoffs. You know, they can't shut off your heat in the colder months. So you stay in your home, but they can evict you. You can get evicted all year round. So you stay in your home and you just pay your landlord, you short your utility company. But then when that day of reckoning comes in April, when the moratorium lifts and people get their gas and electricity shut off, that's when they switch teams. They tend to switch teams and start shorting their landlord to pay the utility company because you have to be connected come next winter to benefit from a moratorium on disconnection. This is the situation for so many low-income Americans today. They are forced to choose between paying for heat or paying for rent, and that's exactly why you do see evictions spike in the summer and drop in the winter.
As you mentioned, when you were talking about the data of what we know about evictions, you said you wanted to spend more of your time with tenants as well as landlords. You do include landlords in the book. Why were they so important to understand those stories?
I mean, these are the folks that literally own poor neighborhoods. You know, they dictate who gets evicted, who doesn't. Where you get to live, the stability of your family and your neighborhood. I mean, landlords have such a vital role to play in low-income communities and low-income families. And I thought that if I wanted to understand how that market works at the very bottom, you know, why do you buy property in some of the poorest neighborhoods? Why do you evict this person but not that person? I really needed to understand the landlord's perspective. And for me, this is a broader point. You know, it's a broader point about housing that forces us to have a harder conversation. You know, if we just say, you know, these tenants, they're just irresponsible. Or if we just say, you know, these landlords, they're greedy. You know, that's a shortcut to thinking on both sides. You know, it's the reality is much more complex. And the book really tries to plumb that complexity. And in doing so, I feel it presents a new way of writing about poverty. You know, poverty isn't just folks that have low incomes or poor neighborhoods. It's a relationship. It involves a lot of us, you know, poor folks and rich folks alike. And so in writing about this crucial relationship in low-income communities, the landlord and tenant relationship, I really wanted to try to write a different kind of book on inequality.
As you say, it is much more complex, but as complex as it gets, it's still hard not to see some evil in what the landlords are doing.
I wouldn't put it like that. What I thought my book was trying to do was to show you as accurately and honestly as I could what it's like being a landlord in very poor neighborhoods. And we see the landlords and evicted. We see them buy groceries for tenants. We see them let some payments slide. We see them bail tenants out of jail. We also see them evict a tenant because they called housing problems in. We see them evict tenants with children in much higher rates than tenants without children. We see them operating in a callous way sometimes and in very humane ways in other times. I think that's complicated, but I think the bigger picture, right? It's like this is a human need. Housing is a fundamental human need. We rely on shelter for basic flourishing and economic mobility, and so this thing can't come down to do you have a nice landlord or a mean landlord? Are you a good tenant or a bad tenant? You know, there's a variation on both sides. The bigger point is, what are we going to do about this massive problem? You know, and what are we going to do about the fact that you got mothers like Arlene having to decide to pay the rent or feed her kids? You know, we don't have to accept that in this rich land. You know, there are things that we can do, and there are things that we should do to address this issue.
And isn't part of the problem that we don't have the oversight? We don't have those numbers. We don't have the information as to how many people are being evicted and what is being done to these people individually.
Yeah, so as a sociologist, right, that kind of question makes me drool. I'm like, yeah, we need more information. We need the numbers. We're going to go get it. And I'm doing a lot of that right now. I'm trying to get eviction numbers from all over the country, trying to figure out who's evicting more people, what's working, what's not, what can we do about it. So I totally am game. But I think we have a few numbers that we know, right? We know that eviction in all the cities that I've looked at is incredibly high. We know that in New York City, for example, there's 60 Marshall evictions every single day. We know that in Milwaukee, there's 40 people evicted every single day. We know that most poor renting families are spending most of their income on housing. There is a crisis out there, and I think that we have enough information to act. And we have programs that are working. I mean, the good news is, like, things like a housing voucher program is incredibly effective, you know. And if Arlene had a housing voucher, she would only have to pay 30% of her income on housing, not 80%, 70%. You know, she could invest in her kids and her community. She could be stable. She could allow her kids to stay in the same school until they graduated. She could put some money aside. We know from research that when families finally get a housing voucher after years and years on the waiting list, they do one consistent thing. They go to the grocery store. You know, they buy more food. Their kids become stronger, healthier. But Arlene's kids and the kids of so many Americans today, they're not getting enough to eat because the rent eats first, you know. So we can take this thing that's working, that's benefiting the lucky minority of low-income families, and we could expand it so that it benefits a lot more folks, even make it a universal program so that it benefits everyone below the poverty line.
One of the things that I took away from the book is how this affects basically everything. When you think about this, whether it be homelessness or hunger issues, mental health issues, addiction issues, all of these things come into play in this, don't they?
You know, poverty is rarely just poverty. You know, it's this collection of maladies. It's this gnarled, festering mess. And these problems kind of coalesce and they stick together and they compound on one another. And the book addresses that complexity head on, I think. And so most of the families in the book, you mentioned addiction, most of the families in the book don't wrestle with addiction. They didn't even drink, which was like a big letdown for me because I'm a guy that likes to have a drink after a hard day and they weren't having it. But so most of them were clean and sober. But we do follow people like Scott, who is wrestling with a heroin addiction. We see him try to struggle and face that addiction. And there were several times where I woke up, before sunrise and went with Scott to the free clinic to try to get drug counseling and, you know, walked up the stairs only to find that there was a line of dozens of people waiting for just a few spots that day. And, you know, Scott doesn't make excuses for his behavior. You know, he thinks his addiction is part moral failing and part biologically based, you know. But there's something wrong, you know, when we have someone like him actively trying to seek help, trying to reach help, and we just don't have enough investment in drug treatment. We can do a lot better on that score as well.
Matthew Desmond's new book is Evicted, Poverty, and Profit in the American City. So after spending a year living with people going through this experience of eviction, how does that ultimately change you?
It changed me in so many ways, you know, in so many ways. And I saw a lot of things that left a really deep mark. I saw this one eviction one time where the movers went into this house and they just found kids. They're just kids. And the mom had died and the kids had just gone on living. And there was a young teenager with these just beautiful gray eyes who was living in the place. And, you know, they evicted them and put their stuff on the curb in this cold, rainy day. And, you know, I just remember her eyes just looking at the sheriffs and the movers as we drove away. It went to another eviction and another one and another one and another one. And I think that stuff wore on me, depressed me. But I also have all these stories of moments of brilliance and moments of courage and humor in the face of incredible obstacles. There's this very brief mention of this time in Milwaukee where I was at McDonald's with these two women, Vanetta and Crystal, who were homeless, looking for housing. Mm-hmm. And this boy walks in, and he's like 9 or 10, and his clothes are messy, and he doesn't go up to order. He goes around to the table looking for scraps. And Crystal and Vanetta notice him at the same time. And I think they notice him because they've been there. And Crystal turns to Vanetta and says, you know, what do you got? And these homeless women, you know, pull the change that they have in their pocket. They go up, they buy this boy lunch. Crystal gives him this huge hug and sends him on his way. And I think that, you know, those stories are all over the pages of Evicted. You know, those stories of deep humanity. Vanetta would call it heart, you know. And they remind me that people like Vanetta and Crystal just refuse to be reduced to their hardships.
Matthew Desmond's new book is Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. It is published by Crown. Matthew, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It was a great conversation. Thank you, sir.
Matthew Desmond's new book is Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. It is published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.